The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paula, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And if
there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven yep. science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I... Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're
Jesus,
the best.
You the okay,
best
never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
Welcome to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy advice show that tells you how to live your life if you'd only pay attention. I'm Adam Felber, the voice of sanity, and now here's that other voice, Paula Poundstone. Welcome, Paula.
Thank you very much. Hey, Adam.
You're a font of advice.
I am. And actually, I just today discovered something that I would like to share.
Okay.
Which is if you can put on a sports bra when you're already a little bit clammy, then you don't need to work out.
Really?
It is so hard.
To get a sports bra over a clammy torso?
Yeah. I did more moaning and more of a reach and a stretch and a pull on my arms.
Is it possible you're doing it wrong? Is it possible you should be putting it on from the other side or something? Or
No. Just you don't
pulling
do
it up over your
side.
Legs or something? No,
you go,
I don't know.
Yeah. No, you don't pull it over your legs.
Okay. Now, is the reverse true? Because obviously everybody gets clammy when they work out.
Yeah.
Is it hard to take off?
It is hard to take off. But my point is, after that, you've already worked out. What I'm saying
so you just
is,
put one
if
on
you
and take
can
it off.
Get it on right. when you're a little bit clammy, you know what? Take a break for an hour.
You're done.
You've fulfilled your quota, your commitment.
Well, that's good advice for anybody out there.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right.
If only people would listen to me. Exactly.
But they won't.
No.
Okay, Paula. You've been giving advice, but here's a question I want to put to you right now. Has anybody been listening?
Nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. Nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. I said nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. I said no. Nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. Well, she got some free advice that would be so nice. Only nobody listens to Paula Poundstone.
Yeah, all right, everybody.
All right.
Not bad.
So, is that the theme song?
It might be the theme song. See, we've been talking about this a lot. I should say, first and foremost, that was performed by our house band this week, musician Tim Freeman.
Thank you. On the guitar.
Tim Freeman, thank you. Welcome, Tim.
And Tim just whipped up a little theme song for you, which, because we were thinking, we need a theme song, right?
Do podcasts have theme songs?
I don't know, but this one should.
I remember so many, well, not from podcasts, but from growing up, television show theme songs, and I don't even know if they do them the way they used to. You know, I mean, I think da 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 da, right?
Right. That's a theme ditty.
That's a theme ditty.
Well, I guess you would call it a theme song, but there's no lyrics.
Isn't that the guy who smokes a lot of pot and then hangs out with Martha Stewart? Theme ditty.
That's P Diddy.
Oh,
but does he hang with Martha Stewart now?
Yeah.
He does?
Yeah.
Well, he's been smoking a lot of pot.
Yeah.
So we're looking for a theme song is what I think is what I'm getting at. With your permission, we could really get into this, figure out what a good theme song is and how to do it. Like, for instance, we don't need a story song, right?
No.
It's not the Brady Bunch here.
No, we're not. We weren't on a 3-hour tour and the tiny ship was tossed. No,
we just walked into the studio and that doesn't make a great song.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It could, but,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, how about, you know, she
Paul
parked
arrived
a little ways
around
away.
6:30. Yeah,
yeah. She left at about 4:30 from Santa Monica to get to North Hollywood.
Because there's
should've
a lot of traffic.
Should have taken 20 minutes, but it took 2 hours. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, yeah, it's very
popular. So we don't need we need more branding lyrics than we need story song lyrics. We're not really setting up a lot here.
Yeah, branding lyrics.
Yeah, because the title says it all.
Yeah.
Anyway, we do have a theme song contender in the can if you want to hear it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it comes to advice,
when it comes to advice,
we gotta say it twice,
we've gotta say it twice.
We listen to mom, we listen to dad, we spread out the good and beat up the bad. We listen to an expert, we read a fat tome, but nobody listens to Paula Poundstone.
To Paula Poundstone.
Now, that one, that is by James Raymond and lyrics by our own Ken Lezebnik. And it's a strong contender for a theme song. I think what I like about it is that it really kind of tugs on your Eastern European Jewish roots.
I think it's really it has definitely captured that.
Yeah, yeah.
I have gone to 2 Passovers, by the way, so.
Okay.
It's not like I'm unfamiliar with,
right.
with your people.
With Jew stuff, yeah.
Yeah, okay. With Jew stuff. I didn't want to say it, but yes,
no, it's
with Jew
stuff. That's what we call it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's got that going for it. And, of course, what it has going against it is that you are not, in fact, Jewish or Eastern European.
We don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah, Poundstones could be anything.
Yeah, my mother lies about so much.
But I get the sense that we're at the beginning of a real long and interesting journey as we find the right theme song for this show.
You know, I can see, just based on this premise, tons of musicians. You know, Neil Diamond just announced that he's not going to tour anymore. But that doesn't mean that he won't submit a Paula Poundstone, nobody listens to Paula Poundstone theme song,
you know,
as soon as he possibly can.
If you're somebody who's recently stopped a legendary touring and recording career and you're listening to this podcast, please.
Yeah.
Got extra time around the house, Neil Diamond?
Exactly.
If you're not working on the perfect, you know, quiche?
Yeah.
Give it a shot. Send it in.
Eric Clapton also announced that he's going
deaf. Go deaf, yes.
And,
which makes him a great candidate for a theme song.
He might want to get it in quickly.
Yeah, yeah. So Eric, start writing now. But right now we have between James Raymond and our own Tim Freeman here today. We've got 2 candidates. Tim, I'm not turning yours down. I like that Delta Blues thing.
Yeah. Well, it's nice that you brought in the other option while I was in the room. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sensitive or anything.
Right. Well, at least we can cut you off and yell thank you, because that's happened to me.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I went in for an audition and then saw Meryl Streep going in right after me.
Oh, she always, always undercut you with that stuff,
it's
right?
It's just galling.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You were up for Sophie's Choice, right?
I was.
That was back when they still thought you were Jewish.
Yeah. Well, it's part of my Eastern European roots, exactly, which apparently only some casting people were familiar with.
Yeah.
But and she, I don't know, I think she did something to get it.
What do you mean? You think she, really?
Well, Come on.
Well, exactly.
Tell me I didn't have that nailed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So she
same
obviously...
thing, out of Africa. Yeah.
You think she pulled a little hanky-panky there, too?
No question.
No question. Yeah. I can't believe they turned you down. So do you have any preliminary advice about to people out there with theme songs? Like, because this is an advice show. Anything you want to encapsulate?
No. I think I don't, actually. Yeah, I don't know where these great ideas come from for good
theme. So we're just putting an APB
songs.
Out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can tell you that I had a show on ABC at one point, and Nils Lofgren did the theme song, and it was fantastic.
Well, he's still around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, I like the one we have
right here. Sorry, Tim.
I know. Like, again, I'm in the room.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, as long as you're in the room.
I'm so in the zone right now that I'm not even thinking about the other people in the room.
The detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me down there my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
We're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay.
Ascertain. Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it? Okay, I think we got it.
Cinefo.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, Paula, I know you have a lot of thoughts about how to keep a friend. That's kind of a thing with you. You maintain relationships well.
Well, I try. I try. Making relationships to begin with is a little bit challenging. People who aren't used to me.
Right.
Yeah. I tend to rub people a little, as they say, the wrong way.
You never rubbed me the wrong way. But I remember early on in our relationship, you just kind of let me know, I'm going to unspool for an hour or so and you're going to listen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I am going to let you talk.
Yeah.
Now, that actually really happened. Like, we were kind of friends.
Did I say you'll get a turn?
Did I say that at
45 minutes in? I said you'll get a turn?
It was something like that. Yeah. You know what it was? We'd hung out a few times. We were friends.
Yeah.
And you and I and my wife, Jeannie, were driving down from Los Angeles to a show in La Jolla together.
I recall.
Yeah. And you were in the back seat. We drove you down there.
Yeah.
And you started asking us questions as you were talking. And then you paused at one point and said, I am going to give you a chance to answer those questions I've asked you. But you have to, and then you explain the whole OCD thing.
Yeah. And eventually I just let you submit them in writing. Is that correct?
Some of them I've yet to submit.
I remember that trip because I remember thinking that it was great that you and Jeannie had you had a blue headset and Jeannie had a pink one. I thought that was adorable.
Headset.
Yeah.
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 To like, shut out ambient noise.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. There was a lot on that trip, as I remember.
Yeah,
there
yeah.
was a lot of cabin. Yeah.
Boy, you guys could go for hours not listening while I was talking.
Yeah. And yeah. Which is why we became such great friends.
I think that was it.
Yeah. So let's bring our guest now. We've got Dr. Jonathan Bowman. Jonathan is a professor of communication at the University of San Diego, and he's written extensively about friendship and intimacy. So if anyone can tell us how to keep a friend, hopefully he can. Please welcome Dr. Jonathan Bowman.
Hi, Doctor. Paula. Hi, Adam. Hi, Paula.
Welcome.
It's great to be here.
Well, thanks for being here. Hey,
of course.
Now, what is intimacy? Do you mean like sex?
Oh, that's a good question. A lot of people think that intimacy is sex. No, when we're talking about intimacy, we're talking about anything that makes you feel really close to another person. So it's kind of those warm, fuzzy feelings. It could be sex. It could be talking about yourself, having lots of personal information that you're sharing.
I like it when it's sex.
It's that's a pretty common response.
Uh-huh. Do you ever say to a woman, do you want to share a lot tonight or have sex?
Well, I do understand that sex is a form of sharing, but yeah, I wouldn't leave it open as do you want to share a lot.
Yeah.
If I was looking for sex.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because okay, then I'd be getting Oreos.
Yeah.
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 Well, I mean, don't turn down a good Oreo.
No, I would never.
How did you become an expert on
friendship?
Yeah.
So I find that people in the social sciences, we always study the stuff that we're either really good at or really bad at. And so I think for me, it was a little bit of a combination of the two. I thought I was really good at friendships. And then when I was in grad school, moved somewhere else, I realized, gosh, maybe I don't know everything that I thought I knew about friendships. You know, long
was that because you couldn't maintain the friendships long distance, or you couldn't make new friends?
I was pretty good at making new friends. It was keeping those old friends that was.
So you were really
tough.
Superficial.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, growing up in California.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, what are your rules then? You must have rules. Like, tell us what do you need to do to maintain a relationship better than you did when you were a grad student?
Yeah, so friendships oftentimes start because of proximity or similarity. And so a lot of it has to do with, you know, well, what happens when that similarity goes away over time, or when your proximity is gone because you've moved across the country or you've moved across town, or you just don't see that person very often because you work in different jobs or something like that. So for me, I think the big rules are what we call these maintenance behaviors, relationship maintaining behaviors. There's things that you can do to really try to make sure that you're keeping that friendship in check, that it's staying. So like the first one, and it seems pretty obvious.
Do you ever just call someone up and go, where are you? What are you doing?
No. Yeah, I mean, that's one of those kind of checking in that you need to constantly be doing with your friends. Sometimes it's as simple as just one simple basic text.
You're pretty good at keeping friends, aren't you?
I've had some of the friends that I have had for a very long time, come to think of it. I've had, yeah, my oldest friend in the world. I've known him since I was two, and we are still friends. But we don't talk all that frequently. But wait a minute. Did I just hear you say the word text? Do you feel like that's a good idea in relationships?
Yeah. So what you need in your relationships is you need depth and you need frequency, right?
Well,
so
how much depth do you get out of a text?
Nothing at all, right? So that's where you get the frequency. So a text, if I'm sending a friend a text once a week or once a month or even once a year for those, you know, really long-term relationships, that may be enough kind of checking in just to let the other person, you know, you're thinking about them. Uh-huh. It's that depth though. You really need to have a good phone call. Otherwise, you know, I can't imagine your texting bill. Are there even texting bills anymore?
Not really. We've talked to a Verizon guy here on this program, and most people don't have texting bills.
Yeah, okay,
anymore.
Okay.
I'll tell you, you know, I was in Logan Airport the other day, and they have a section. I swear this is germane. They have a section of hallway where they have this sort of timeline of things that were invented or created in Massachusetts.
Oh.
And one of them is Necco Candies. I knew Necco Candies mm-hmm. were in Massachusetts, but what
of course,
I didn't
New
know.
New England Candy Company. That's hence the name.
Well, I'm not a cryptographer, but.
it's not really very complicated.
But I didn't. Boy, you.
Did I just teach you something there?
You must work with the Russians. That was unbelievable. That was no scratch paper, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing. Just right off his head. No, what I didn't realize was that the Necco Company makes the sweetheart Valentine hard candies with the words printed on the front. And on this thing on the wall, as I'm walking towards, you know, leaving the airport, going towards the baggage claim, they showed old ones, right? Pictures from old ones, which said stuff like, I love you and kiss me. And then they showed some modern ones. And the modern ones were, LOL and text me.
Yeah.
And I thought, I think I found what's wrong with the world.
Sure.
Wow.
You know, LOL, how is that romantic again? And text me? It's so different from kiss me.
Yeah, but there probably was one that said call me.
There wasn't in that particular picture. These were the example ones that they were
using.
Drawing
a large societal theory based on one picture of Fandy.
And by the way, there's a writer that works on this stuff. You know,
that's a very specific medium, because that makes text messages seem like books.
Yeah, exactly.
It's got to fit on a tiny, crappy candy heart.
You've got seven characters.
Yeah. I wonder if any, you know, kid approaches their dad at the end of his work day, you know, and says, will you come throw the ball with me? And he goes, no, honey, I've been writing little candy hearts all day. I came up with LOL. I'm exhausted. Anyways, yeah, so that's lack of intimacy in one's Valentine candies is of concern to me, and I feel the texting is part of the problem. Yeah.
Now, John, I just want to say, if that's not at all relevant to what we're talking about here, that's okay. All
it's
right?
Totally relevant.
It's totally relevant. It's in the neighborhood. Okay, so intimacy, which is a function of both frequency and
depth.
Yeah. Okay,
sure.
What else?
I think another big thing that we don't oftentimes think about is the positivity of the relationship. So, in general, relationships need to have more positivity than less.
Good job, Adam.
Thank you, Polly. You're doing great.
And what's interesting is, you know, you can still have those moments of negativity or conflict and that kind of thing, but it just has to be kind of more positive than negative. So I think that's something that we don't think about, because sometimes you want to come together with a friend and you want to just, you know, like, talk about your day or complain about work or that kind of thing.
So more positivity
than
negativity. So good job, Adam. Fuck you, Adam. Good job, Adam.
Yeah, that was
so
there.
Would that be the right ratio?
Absolutely.
That's 66% that's, positive. I feel good about myself.
Yeah, that's good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well done, Paula. Fuck you. So you got to be positive. What else? Like with long-distance friends, it's obviously calling and texting.
Texting? Yeah.
So long-distance friendships are weird, right? Because you don't actually see the person, and so you don't have a sense of who they are and how they're growing and changing. And, you know, the relationship is probably a lot different, but you aren't next to each other to be able to figure that out. And right. So,
well, I know Paul's going to hate this, but I've noticed, like, with my kids, particularly my older kid, he's 9 now, when he has a long-distance relationship with people, with a couple of people, they like to do the FaceTime chat.
Sure.
You know, sometimes they're just playing a game together, but they see each other in little boxes on the screen. And like, I noticed that. So he met this this daughter of a friend of ours like a year ago, and they really hit it off. And they play games together while looking at each other's faces about once a week.
But they're playing games together? Like what? Like video games?
Yeah, like computer games.
Oh, Jesus.
I know you hate those. I said you'd hate this.
Well, they cause mental health problems, but go ahead.
Yeah, but they're friends.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is that as they both lose mental function, they're going down that path together.
Together. And that's important. Yeah. Back me up here, John.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and also that's another form of intimacy. So we didn't talk about recreational intimacy, but that's doing stuff with other people. That's almost as important as your sexual intimacy or your emotional intimacy. It's just another way of being good friends or romantic partners.
Give me an example. Not of the sex part, I'm fairly clear on, but...
Just spending time together doing things that you want to do. So it's a little bit difficult with long-distance friendships, but in this case, they're spending time together, playing video games, like they're recreating with one another, and that lets them feel very close to one another.
Mm-hmm. I just don't know if it's healthy for kids to see each other in a little box.
Right.
Yeah, I just don't
know. Right, no, but that's why I don't let him chat with her when I put him in the box.
That's good.
Because, you know, when he does something, he spends 10 minutes in the box.
It
gives me a lip about it, 15 minutes in the box.
It's cool. And look over there. I just feel like, I actually was just talking with this therapist in Boston, and he insists on using Zoom, which is some, what do you call it?
Conferencing software?
Yeah, but it's like highly secure. And I really could just talk on the phone. That's fine with me. Uh-huh. I don't care if the Russians hack my information gathering session with this guy. I don't care at all. So today they showed me how to do it. And like what you end up seeing is yourself in a little box. And then you see them in a little box. And it's a little bit like I have a map rug in my house of the United States.
Yeah, your drum kit is on it.
Yeah, exactly. And Hawaii and Alaska are both in a box somewhere in the Pacific. And I feel it's the same thing for kids to grow up seeing each other in a little box on a screen. It's just it's
they won't have a sense of where that person is.
Right. It's misinformation. You know, like a lot of kids think for sure that Alaska is just off the coast of California. Just
did you think that as a kid? Because they were always in a box when we were growing up.
I had no concept of where any place else was.
Can I go back to your kid, though? So one of the things that's good about him seeing his friend in that little box, though, which we don't get through any other forms of long-distance communication, is you're reducing the hyper-personal perspective. So the hyper-personal perspective is this idea that when you're doing things online with other people and interacting, they can't see much about you, and so they automatically assume the best of you. And so then you have these like really built up amazing views of your friends or maybe people that you're romantically interested in. And then when you finally meet them, it's a total letdown. So what your son is doing is actually great because he's keeping that relationship in the way that it should be.
He won't be surprised when
he
sees her
again. Absolutely. So that's kind of much better than the other ways that we could think about it.
Huh. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Paula doesn't agree. because it involves a screen. I think
there are drawbacks to screens and video games. But I will say I work with someone that is often
when we are
on the phone,
right?
She thinks I don't know that she is scrolling.
Oh, sure.
And doing other work, and so there's these sort of long pauses, and in that case, maybe it would be good if I had some sort of surveillance camera on her.
Yeah.
Right.
I actually did a research study on that. We were looking at people engaging some other task and also at the same time having communication interactions with another person. So talking to a friend on the phone. And we found that people think they're good at communicating while doing something else. We call that dual tasking.
There's no such thing.
Yeah. They can't do it. So everyone looks at like the task like, oh, can they drive a car safely, et cetera.
Right.
But it turns out the communication sucks too. Right. So you think you're like, oh, at least I'm having a good conversation and driving okay. But really you're having a sucky conversation and driving pretty poorly.
Yeah. If only there was a way of letting this person know that.
The great thing is, Paula, is that we have a podcast now. And if that person is out there somewhere.
Yeah. Wherever she was.
Like, if she could be as close as, say, the four of us at this table or your manager, Bonnie, over here. And that person might hear it and think, you know what? That could be me.
Yeah. Well, this person that I'm thinking of has insisted for years that she, and I am making the little quotation marks with my fingers,
air quotes,
multitasks.
And you're saying she doesn't.
I have said to her over and over again, there is no such thing
as
multitasking.
Absolutely true.
Says, what?
We do cognitive switching. So then we're just, we're switching back and forth from the task to the conversation.
Sure.
And so really we're only putting half our effort into both of them.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so that's
close to putting down my phone at this moment so I can do a better job.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Once you get on the Angry Birds, you have a hard time focusing. And so that sort of thing would lead to a lack of depth in the communication, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine
you're
that
just
that would...
plain looking at Bonnie at this point.
No, I'm not looking at Bonnie. I don't know what makes you say that.
It looked like you were many times during this conversation.
I was just going to ask you something. All right, what about a relationship that where you or the other person? Here's an example. What with my sister?
Sure.
If I didn't call my sister, I would never hear from her.
Sure.
You know, years ago, I just sort of accepted that, and I went, okay, well, then if I want to talk to her, I guess I have to call. But, I think because we're related, I've put up with that. But I can't imagine in most friendships, what do you do when you feel like, wait, I do all the calling?
So there's two kind of different ways you could look at that. Like, one is that we say that one of the relationship maintaining behaviors that's really important is assurances. So that's verbal or nonverbal, like, expressions of support. So if you aren't calling me, if we're not texting, if we're not interacting with each other, then we're not assuring each other of our relationship. And so her not calling you doesn't like show you that she really cares that much in that way. But
I would also think about the restraining order she ought.
Fair. That's very fair.
Okay. Yeah. I hadn't even brought that into
being sent.
That is mixed signals, I think.
I don't even think they're mixed. I think she's not calling you and having you. It doesn't sound mixed at all.
So you're saying that if, what are you saying?
Well,
I'm sorry, I was doing something else.
Okay, yeah.
I'm kidding.
So one of the things, though, is because you guys are related, you have that sense of obligation, right? And so because there's that sense of commitment that's kind of built into the relationship, oftentimes families aren't really good about those relationships.
Well, apparently she doesn't feel any obligation.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, until, you know, like there's going to be a need for a blood transfusion, I'm sure I'll get a call. But prior to that, you know, no, clearly she doesn't feel any obligatory connection at all, because I always do, always did the letter writing. Always did the call.
But at least you're not dwelling on it is the important thing.
No,
it's just
no.
How the relationship works.
I've let it go.
Yeah. No, that's clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've let it go.
Letting this stuff build itself up.
No. Are you calling her now?
Not the second. No, I'm talking to you. Jesus, if I'm not in a little box, you don't see me, do you?
That's fair, yeah.
Well, let me just ask you, Jonathan, what about letter writing? Ever any studies about the difference between letter writing and what people do now?
There haven't been too many studies about it, but in general, findings have shown that people enjoy having something tangible from a friend. So I'm really big on postcards. It's about the same length of a tweet, if you really think about it, but it's handwritten. The person can keep it for a day before they throw it away rather than just deleting it immediately, which is a really embarrassing thing to say. But so, you know, I think that's a great method to give someone kind of a tangible reminder of who you are and the fact that you're in their life.
I love letter writing. I love receiving letters. And I must say, I've never carried an email close to my heart.
I've actually printed them out. I've printed out emails.
Oh, printed
just
out
so I
emails?
Keep them. Yeah, which is really embarrassing to admit.
Yeah. Well, do you notice that the signature is a lot the same on each?
Yes, absolutely.
And what about this, Jonathan? I just have to ask you one more thing.
Sure.
What about if you happen to be in a friendship, and I'm sure this doesn't happen. I can't even think of why I'm thinking of this, but and you just can't stop talking.
Ooh. I think you'd have to maybe get some someone to walk around behind you and play some music out.
Oh!
Yeah, I bet you would.
That could be a good idea.
All right, so now we've had some fantastic advice from Dr. Jonathan Bowman, but we have to put it through the advice filter known as Paula Poundstone. Paula, for our listeners, what's your advice on how to maintain a friendship?
Tim, would you play a little something over my advice? Well, of course you have to talk to each other, do stuff together, stay real but not too negative. Like, I think I got some bad fish last night, but I love your bathroom. And don't bother calling my sister.
That's terrific advice. All right, Jonathan Bowman, Dr. Jonathan Bowman, may I call you my friend?
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you so much, man. All right, let's move on to our next segment, which is, how do you know when you've been cheated by a car mechanic? Now, Paula, let's hear your pre-advice before you know anything about that.
Okay, well, first of all, let me just say that I have never met an auto mechanic that did not rip me off.
Never.
I had a 65 Mustang that was in the shop over 40 times in 8 months. I have been ripped off every way that one possibly can be by auto mechanics. And part of it is because I think the method I always used was, I would be honest. I would go in and say, look, I don't know anything about cars.
Oof.
Right. I'd say, you know, I have almost no money. And I love this car. Can you help me? And these are the three things that they need to know to just...
Well, I think if you'd said, and I have a lot of money, that would be even worse. I don't know anything about cars. Yeah. I have unlimited supply of money, and I love this car like a child.
Yeah.
That would be the absolute worst thing.
So they knew that I would do anything to keep it running.
Yeah.
They knew that I wouldn't know whether they did what they were supposed to do or not.
Right.
And they knew that they could basically just suck me dry. So I think the mistake I made was, of course, the first mistake was just letting them know how ignorant I was.
Right.
So here's my theory. When you go to the auto mechanic, you should have a little bit of grease on your hands and wear coveralls with your name embroidered on them.
Okay.
And just give them the impression that you haven't had time to fix it
yourself.
You're
a mechanic who's so busy that you don't have time to fix your own car.
Right, exactly.
Do you put on like a mechanic voice too when you do it? Like how would you sound if you were?
Well, I like to just lift up the hood no matter what's wrong with the car.
Uh-huh.
Like it could even just be that the sun visor's off,
right.
But I still lift up the hood.
To show them that you know how to lift the hood.
Yeah. Well, I did one time the brake or the gas pedal that fell off? One of the two pedals fell off, I forget. And I lifted the hood and showed it to the guy.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, then let's find out how accurate that incredibly good advice is. We're going to welcome
Darren Bart. It's very accurate.
We're going to welcome Darren Bart from the Whitney Auto Service in Van Nuys. Whitney is a third-generation family-run shop. And one of our producers, I think that's Ken Lizebnik, swears it is the only completely honest repair shop he has ever experienced. Darren Bart, welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Thanks for being here, Darren.
Glad to be here.
Ken, of course, is famous for riding a tricycle everywhere he goes. So
yeah.
I'm not sure I trust
his. Not going to make it too far.
Not on a tricycle.
Do you remember when Ken first brought his car to you in your repair shop?
Actually, I do vaguely remember meeting them, and their son brought in a car. And I told him, don't get that car, get a Toyota. And he took my advice, and he's
What car did you tell him not to get?
It was a Volkswagen or an Audi. I think it was a little Volkswagen.
But Volkswagens are Audis, right?
Yeah, same thing to me. So he ended up getting the Fit, and
it
was a bright color, a Honda Fit.
What? I don't know what a Honda Fit is.
It's a small...
My son's had a Fit in every kind of car.
Honda, yeah. A little compact car.
Is it a Fit has like a pillow over at the glove compartment where the person could just bang their head.
Maybe.
That's
maybe.
A safety device for someone with kids.
Darren, how do you spot a dishonest mechanic?
You just look at him.
I told Ken earlier, we had some dinner and talking to him. I tell people, you know, because other shops, and I've even used other shops outside of the area when I bought a car out of state. I had it looked at by another shop. Are they ASC certified, automotive service excellence, and are they AAA approved? And those two qualifications right there should, you know.
It, at least. It,
and by the way, that's different than AA approved.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You need to.
That'll be different.
Yeah, just being sober isn't enough to make an honest mechanic.
No, a lot of drinkers struggling not to drink can't really tell you if your car's working or
not. And if they have a big sticker on the wall that says AA approved, they're kind of violating the anonymity part of it, too.
You got to trust your gut. You got to, you know, that's why you come in. I'm the first person, my dad, Roger, you come in, you're going to meet us, and we're the real deal. I'm just a human, trying to fix cars. You come in, tell me your issues, I'm going to take it down, and we try to do the best we can.
So, but you must be familiar with dishonest mechanics.
And we see the dealerships, and they're not all bad, but we do see a lot.
Are some signs that they're taking you for a ride?
They just oversell. You know, they just go for the jugular on everything because it's all about putting the numbers out there. They sell so much stuff. They give everyone huge estimates, and eventually someone's going to take it and they're going to sell stuff they don't need. And then you're talking to a person that then passes the car off to their technicians, their A team, B team. Then they come back, tell them, oh, they need this. They sell it to you. They've never looked at the car. They don't know what your brakes look like. They're just being told by someone else who's just getting paid by it. So there's room for dishonesty there. They're not all like that, but it can be.
Okay.
And so where with us, you come in, the guys tell me it needs brakes. I go out there and look at it in my own eyes.
Right.
Can say, you know what? If it's my car, I'd go longer, you know, and give options.
I think you're rare, though.
We are rare. That's why we've been around since 1950.
You could be like, someone could tag your ear and put you like out in the field. Yeah. Because listeners won't know this.
Right. We have a vast international audience, some of whom don't have the option of coming to your
Hello
show.
Hello out there.
This guy is like the Opie of auto mechanics. He looks so innocent.
There's no
and
way
sweet.
He's lying to us. Now, Darren, let me ask you a question, because you have an amazingly honest face.
And okay.
I thought a minute ago when Paula was talking that when I saw an expression cross your face that maybe Paula's problem isn't bad mechanics so much as her tendency to drive old and shitty cars. Is that what you were thinking?
I do see that. I tell
it was a classic car. It's not an old shitty car.
I drive a Toyota Prius. We always recommend Japanese cars, the Toyota and Hondas.
Because they don't break down as much.
Yeah. They definitely stand the test of time. They're better quality cars, in our opinion.
American cars, okay.
Yeah.
Than the German vehicles.
What he's not telling you is his dad is full-blooded Japanese.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you start repairing cars when you were like a little boy?
I have, ever since little, my grandma remembers me taking cars and putting them up on the toy blocks trying to work on them, and always Legos and breaking them and trying to put it back together. And
wow.
It's always
Did you
been
have
in there.
Like those little Fisher Price men? And then you would rip them off?
No.
You would practice conning them out of money?
How to cheat them out of their life.
No. Oh, sorry. I have to put your car up on the blocks, and then you have to give me
I was into the Hot Wheels. I was into cars and that stuff. But it was more of just see how fast you can make them go.
Is there a phrase that I could use when I go to a shop to make them think I know more than I know?
Tell them hi. Ask just, them their name.
Just hi and what's your name? Yeah. Oh, that's a giveaway. It's on their coveralls.
Yeah. Right. Right. You've proved that you're illiterate.
Yeah, exactly. But, I really know nothing about cars. Until just recently, I thought rotating the tires meant just turning them slowly when they were up on the lift.
Did you really?
Yeah.
That's for real.
Yeah, that is for real. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you're aware that tires rotate in that manner all the time when you drive.
Well, that's why I always thought it was weird.
Yeah, it would be.
Every time they said, we have to rotate your tires, I'm like, well, that's insane. I've just been driving.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm not. It's not my area.
I don't feel like you have enough knowledge to know if you're being ripped off.
Well, that, I ended up going to...
Sometimes you might be doing what's right.
No.
You've had a bad experience.
Place,
you've been traumatized.
No, I had multiple bad experiences. They didn't... first of all, one guy, they didn't even test drive the car. And when I went back, because I was going over the Bay Bridge and the car started to shimmy. And when I went back and the guy sort of confessed that he never test drove it. And I did start to yell at him, and he said, oh, how you think it feels to be yelled at? He was a Asian guy.
Yeah,
and,
I can tell by the accent.
Yeah. And I said, well, how do you
Darren
think it feels to be going
to
over the Bay Bridge and feel like you're going to crash? And he goes, oh, yeah, that probably not feel too good.
So there was no trust there.
No, but at least you
keep... I would trust you. Yeah. So that's why I'm asking, is there something I could know about? Because so much of it now is like computer stuff anyway.
Oh, so you want Darren to teach you a little bit of jargon so you don't sound ignorant?
Right, exactly.
But the best thing is come in and give, like when you go to the doctor, you give your symptoms and take it down. Some people come in and they immediately are trying to diagnose their own car. You know, I'm overheating. I need a new radiator. How much for a radiator? Hold on. Pump the brakes. Let us find out what's going on. Then we'll...
Why would you pump the brakes if you're overheating?
I don't know. Exactly.
Okay. What's a tie rod?
Tie rod is part of the steering.
Oh, is
inner
it
outer?
Because I always hear people talking about the car throwing a tie rod, right?
I don't think so.
You've never heard that?
No.
I'm pretty sure I have. Maybe it was from one of those guys I went to.
Tie rod is, you can see this, right? Everyone listening?
Yeah, everyone can see us.
I'm using my hands.
Yeah.
the rack and pinion, it connects the steering.
I've never known what rack and pinion was.
The rack is connected to the pinion with the tie rod.
Oh, yeah. Rack and pinion steering. I've heard of that.
But yeah, you can't throw a tie rod. You can bend a tie rod when you hit a curb, and then your alignment's off and your tire's going inside. That's going to be the tie rod right there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you bend your tie rod.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of my late excuses for work once.
I'm
looking at some
rod.
Of the questions that we have written up for us here, and they don't make any sense to me, but I'm going to read you one.
Okay.
Why do they have pinup calendars in the bathrooms? Do you have pinup calendars in your bathroom?
I have a world map in the bathroom.
A world map, but
so it's
behind,
a planetary pinup
behind the world map.
Are you talking about in the restroom?
In the restroom, yeah.
No, we have a map and put pins where I have been or want to go.
Okay.
And underneath that,
there's no pictures of naked women in there.
That's exactly.
None of that.
I guess
were the good old days, but I missed it all.
Sounds like a question from 1975. Yeah.
They don't do that.
Okay,
we're
do
in
you
a
remember?
Politically correct world now. That's kind of all gone away. It used to be more that
it hasn't
the guys
gone
in the
away.
Toolbox would have the pictures. But that honestly, the companies, the parts companies would give those calendars out.
Oh.
But they don't do that anymore. Now they put pictures of cars on the calendar. And who wants to look at cars?
Yeah. In a garage.
Yeah. No one.
Do you remember when you were little?
That's like pinups in a strip club.
We throw them away. We don't
do you
want
remember
to look at
when
cars?
You would put the toy cars up on the blocks?
Yeah.
And then you had those little pinup calendars?
Yeah.
Like a small Fisher-Price pinup calendar? You went, oh, look at that baker.
So that's what people think of car repair.
Yeah,
this is good.
Yeah,
I want to make the generalization.
Because it
people,
is there.
Because I'm guessing who wrote this question?
I think that was my question.
No, I like it.
Yeah.
Okay, because I thought the pinup thing had gone the way of the horse, of the...
Doo-doo?
No, it went into a different room.
Of the sob?
It's no longer in the bathroom. It's now in another room. It's there.
I don't think it is.
It's not.
Well, email us if you if you know of a garage.
So you go into your restroom at your repair shop. And you're like sitting on the toilet and you move a pin to show where you've been.
No,
before.
On the urinal above
they
it, we have
pins?
A National Geographic. Every once in a while, they have a new poster and we'll put that up there.
You put up a National Geographic. Tell me, there's not naked women in there.
There's not one.
Mostly not.
We're trying to run a repair shop. And
there you go.
It's not a bar. It's not a hangout. It's just
how many barflies have you had to tell that to? All right, fellas, let's move along. There's no pinup girls in here. This
Again,
is not
if,
a bar.
If there were barflies at the garage you took your car to?
Yeah.
Probably
it was probably
garage.
A bar.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
If they're drinking and fixing your car.
Yeah.
And they will take advantage of you.
That's exactly what I feel like an idiot.
Yeah, well.
Oh, my God. That's why it's so good that we get together.
Yeah.
Here.
I can help identify those little tiny details that might
have. You know, I wondered why none of them had the coveralls with their name over the pocket.
No, they just had overshirts with vomit on them,
A lady came over and said, "Hi, my name is Stormy." And I said,
Will you fix my
65 Mustang?
Yeah. Oh, now so much is coming clear.
Do people stiff you on your payments? Does that happen a lot?
Someone stole their car last week. Or 2 weeks ago.
They stole their car.
We put an engine in the vehicle. The guy showed up to pick his car. My dad went out there with him. He wanted to see it. So go out there, open the hood. Look, there's the engine in it. You want to start it, starts it. You want to go for a test drive. My dad goes to close the hood.
Uh-oh.
And Raymond Barago, he's got a...
Raymond Barago, yeah. Sure. He's pulled this all over.
If you're out there, call us up. Hey, the police are coming for you.
Raymond hit the gas and left.
And then my dad went around, closed the hood, went to open the door, and he took off. My dad thought the throttle stuck. He took off so quick, nearly running my dad over. And he sped out the driveway and ran through the stop sign right there. And my dad comes in and goes, "I don't think he's coming back." I said, "He's coming back." And then I went out there and then it kind of sunk in that.
Raymond Barago.
So
Wow. Does that happen a lot?
No, this is the first it's ever happened.
That seems like a stupid crime. I got to say.
Stupid crime because I.
Raymond, this is Paula. Get in the closet. Get in the closet.
Towed in by AAA. So we have his AAA information.
Right, we have his name, information.
Have his address. Yeah. Have his girlfriend, whatever.
Yeah.
He's looked him up on Facebook, but this is a case of another thing. For you,
LOL, stole my old car today. Yeah. Yeah. A picture of him like. Sticking out his tongue.
You're talking about how to...
What if somebody comes in the door and they have a big t-shirt on that says, "Friends with Raymond Barago"?
Yeah.
Free Raymond Barago. What kind of car do you drive? And I bet the answer is...
I just want to say one thing. I talked to Raymond and he told me. He told me you guys gave him such a good deal.
Yeah.
Oh, what kind of car was Raymond's?
It was a Saab.
It was a Saab?
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
So that was bad.
They don't make them like that anymore.
No criminal drives a Saab. That's ridiculous. This is Raymond on a heist.
Yeah. Did not want to work on the car to begin with, but hey, it was
not a Saab
car
fan.
No, Saab's not even around anymore.
Right.
Saabs aren't around anymore?
No,
because it's a depressing name for a car.
Is that true?
They're out of business.
No, you're spelling it wrong.
I'm saying it right.
It's not S-O-B.
Yeah, but...
I'm driving an SOB.
But people say I drive a Saab, and I always feel like
I feel sorry for
you.
Yeah, yeah. For a while in the early 90s, I drove wept openly.
See?
Yeah,
and that
depressing.
Depresses people.
Very depressing.
Yeah. I wept openly, yeah. For a few years, I drove a Honda Suicidal.
That was
not a happy car to be in.
Yeah, until somebody talked you out of it.
But you drive a Japanese car, right? Because you're
I dad. Drive... A Toyota Prius with 300,000 miles on it.
Wow, that's
and
nice.
So it's a guinea pig, and it just keeps going, and it gets me to and from work.
Fantastic. So, Paula, having gleaned this new information from Darren, what is your new advice that no one will listen to about car repair?
So, Tim, will you play a little something behind my advice? So, Darren, thank you so much. This was excellent advice, I'm sure. And if I have it straight, if I go to an auto mechanic, I should say a nice hello and ask the mechanic's name. Then I can head to the bathroom to move the pin on the map.
Yes.
And if I really want a good deal, have Raymond Barago take my car in.
No, that'll get you some time behind jail.
Thank you so much, Darren.
All right, thank you, Darren Bart. Darren and his father own Whitney Auto Service, the best auto repair shop in Los Angeles, possibly in the country. I myself ride a bicycle, but I would take it into you for repairs, Darren.
Bike's a good way to go.
Thank you so much.
I hope people out there have been listening.
Well, yeah, chances are, Paula, that, you know, the title of the show is Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, so...
They probably haven't.
Probably not. But Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam Felber. It's produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, but a different Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns and Ken Lezebnik, along with Liza Forster. Technical direction by Jorge Reyes. Snacks for our guests was provided by a rotating member of our production team. I think it was Ken this week. Tim Freeman on the guitar was our house band. Thank you, Tim. And thank you to our guests, Dr. Jonathan Bowman and Darren Bart.
That's our show for tonight. See you next week when we'll broadcast live from Betty Jameson's house in Fayette, Missouri.
No, we won't.
I'm not really close. I haven't maintained my relationship with Betty Jameson.
I think she's stuck in a box somewhere.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.